Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kivitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kivitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kivitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. Hi, everyone. I'm Beth Delpani. I will be Dr. Kivitko's guest host for today. And we have a very interesting topic, children's dentistry. And I have a couple of children of my own, so I'm personally very interested in this. With me today, we have Dr. Dennis McTeague, a professor of pediatric dentistry at The Ohio State University. He'll be joining us to answer a lot of questions and get into some very interesting topics. He has quite an extensive background, and he is with us right now. I want to welcome Dr. McTeague. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Sure.
We'll get into, obviously, some more of the topics later, but I just wanted to mention a couple things that you've done. There's a long list here, but you are director of the American Board of Pediatric Dentistry.
I'm one of the directors, yeah. There's several. I'm just one of them.
Yes, just one of them. You've also chaired the Department of Pediatric Dentistry at The Ohio State University College of Dentistry for several years.
Right.
So we'll be very interested to get to our children's dentistry topic, but we also have Dr. Kivitko, who is going to say a quick hello to us this morning. Hi, Dr. Kivitko.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing okay, and we're sorry that you're not here with us, but you can at least say hello. You've got an important thing to do today.
Oh, I do? What's that?
Well, your daughter's... I'll let you tell it.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure what you were referring to. You're right. My daughter is graduating from the University of Dayton today, and I do appreciate you covering for me so that I can go to that.
Okay, and also, we also want to get to the question of the day for now. I was going to let you throw that out there.
Okay. Today's question of the day is, according to Men's Health Magazine, the city where the most people visited the dentist within the past year was what?
Want me
to say it again?
Yeah, why don't we repeat it, just in case someone missed it?
Okay. According to Men's Health Magazine, the city where the most people visited the dentist within the past year was what?
We'll have to give that a little thought. And, of course, remember that you can call in your guesses at 821-1230. You can always email them. We have the computer right here. That's to Dentally Speaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. We would love to hear from you. Anything else you want to say, Dr. Kivitko, before we let you head off for your special day?
Well, I wanted to thank you for covering for me, Beth, and I also want to thank Dr. McTeague for being willing to take time out of his busy schedule to be with us this morning. I think our listeners are in for a treat because he's probably the expert on the topic of pediatric dentistry, so we're very happy to have him. And to be honest, I look forward to listening to the podcast myself later, which I'm sure you'll give out the address later.
I sure will. I sure will, because that's obviously a very convenient way for people that unfortunately missed the show. They can listen to the podcast, and then they really didn't miss out on anything at all. So thank you so much, Dr. Kivitko.
All right. You guys have a great show.
We sure will. And keep in mind, everyone, again, as I mentioned, the topic today is children's dentistry. And I have a three-year-old, and I know sometimes that's a good time to start thinking about taking your child to the dentist. Some of the issues or topics that we'd like to get into today, I'll just mention a few of those. Pediatric trauma. We'll be talking a little bit about if maybe your child has some type of trauma to his or her mouth, how that is handled. Some of the other things, just when to take your child to the dentist and how does it all work, as well as children receiving dental care under general anesthesia. Those are some other things. So lots of interesting things to get to. And again, Dr. Dennis McTeague is here with us today. And we'll go ahead and get started. And first, I just want to start, Dr. McTeague, with when is a good time to take your child to the dentist?
Well, you know, it used to be that people thought that you didn't have to take your child to the dentist until they were 3 or 4 years old and able to cooperate. And we've changed that a lot, Beth. What we'd like to do is to see a child at about the age of one. At the age of one, they've got several teeth coming in, and it is predictably, hopefully, before there's any dental disease. One of the reasons that we want to do this is because we've seen such a problem with early childhood caries. Caries is another word for dental decay. And it's so difficult to treat in a very young child, and the idea of an early appointment is to have an opportunity to talk to the parent about a host of things that are going to affect their child's oral health. For instance, eating habits and feeding before bedtime and introducing new foods and introducing sugars and other substances that can cause decay. So we think it's real important to see a child at the age of one.
I'll be honest, I was surprised to hear that, and maybe a lot of listeners would be surprised to hear that. I mentioned I have a three-year-old, and I used to always hear, age three is a good time to start taking them. So you're saying that actually age one is definitely what they want to be doing.
Well, yeah, you know, that was because people expected that, you wanted a child to behave. And you don't expect to have an infant. And I'm a pediatric dentist. That's a specialist in dentistry for children. And so we're trained to take care of kids of all age, and including patients with special health needs of basically all ages. But the idea with an infant or with a one-year-old is to see the child with the parent. The two of you hold the child together and examine the child's mouth together and answer all the questions. And not every child in the family then has to be seen at the age of one, but obviously the firstborn it would be the most important. And it's also to sort of establish a home, a dental home for the child, so that if something happens, if your two-year-old runs and falls and hits the coffee table and knocks out a tooth or something, you don't have to say, oh, my gosh, who am I going to call? Who's going to see my two-year-old? You've already established a home and then we'd be able to take care of her.
That's a good point. A question that parents may have is, how do you make your child's first visit a good experience? Obviously, they're going to be hesitant. It's an unknown. They might be scared.
Right.
What were some things that you can tell parents about making it, obviously, a pleasant experience?
Well, you know, the dentist should know as well that this is the first visit. So I think that it starts with the first phone call to the dental office to say, you know, this is my child. She is so whatever the age is. And this is his first appointment, and we want it to be a positive one. And the dental office should be able to guide you. And it can vary tremendously, but the best thing is to just be very open and just say, you know, the dentist is going to count your teeth, and we're going to learn about your teeth. One of the concerns that we have is that when we were children, we may have had a scary experience with a dentist, and sometimes parents can convey those fears to the child. So the last thing we want a parent to say is, we're going to the dentist and it's not going to hurt, you know? I mean,
sure.
The child probably never even considered that you were going to take them somewhere they were going to be hurt. So trying not to preload the child with some concerns about that would be good. But I think, again, just having a good conversation with the dental office and asking what their protocol is. Pediatric dentists have a lot of fun ways to introduce oral health to children, and parents really shouldn't be concerned about that, particularly if you take your child before there's a problem. If we have to wait in the first appointment, it's when the child has a swollen face or, you know, a toothache or a broken tooth, then that's a more difficult problem, obviously.
Sure, they're already starting with a negative.
Right.
Tell me this, would I take my child to a family dentist or one who necessarily specializes in children, a pediatric
dentist?
You know,
and most family dentists take care of children and they do a great job. It's very similar to a pediatrician. It's the same decision you'd make there. Do you take your child to the family practitioner, and family practitioners in medicine treat children all the time, or do you want to take them to someone who specializes only in children? It's the exact same situation. If your child is normal and healthy and you've got a great family dentist you like and your family dentist wants to see children, then great. If your family dentist doesn't particularly want to see children, then it might be a good idea for you to choose a pediatric dentist. Or if you just want to see somebody who is geared to only see children, again, pediatric dentists specialize for 2 or 3 years after dental school and are specialists in all the diseases and problems that children have and are experienced and able to guide a child's behavior no matter what the problem is. And so it's a personal decision.
Sure, and I know here you've had a private practice in pediatric dentistry. Is it for over 30 years now? Is that
yeah, right?
So you've obviously dealt with children quite a bit, so that may be a great route to go.
Well, it's fun. I mean, pediatric dentists enjoy seeing children, and so it's a fun thing. I can't imagine taking care of adults. I frequently tell the dentists I teach, if I had to treat adults, I'd go find another job.
Yeah, kids obviously are a lot of fun.
They are.
Well, this is obviously going a little bit of a different direction, but on the topic of fluoride in the water at homes, does your child still need to have a fluoride treatment when they go to the dentist? We know that there's fluoride in our drinking water, but is that enough?
You know, it depends. And we used to think that every child who comes into the dental office should have a fluoride treatment, and certainly many still do need it. But I think that if a child lives in an area where there's fluoridated drinking water and is getting, you know, and is drinking that water, many people are drinking bottled water now and aren't, you know, and aren't getting the fluoride in the drinking water. And if they don't have any dental problems, they don't have any cavities, and they haven't had, then they're very low risk. So we look at the risk that a child has for dental disease. The child who has cavities and has had cavities before definitely needs to have fluoride in the dental office. And it's sort of the same thing like x-rays. We don't need, you know, some children need more dental x-rays than others just because they continue to have more decay and they're at a greater risk. So, you know, that's a great question to ask your dentist. Do you think my child really needs to have this fluoride today? And if so, why?
And you know what's happening in the schools these days? I know when I was little, we did the swish.
Right.
Do you know what the latest is on that?
Well, it depends on whether there's fluoride in the drinking water, Beth. Probably in the Columbus area, nobody's doing any swish and spit, because that was just a topical fluoride rinse. There are communities in the country where there is no fluoride in the drinking water, mm-hmm. and they probably do that. Another real important thing that happens, that can happen for children's teeth, permanent teeth, are dental sealants. And you probably have heard of those. Mm-hmm. These happen in some schools in Columbus, probably rather than the fluoride, because fluoride is available here. But these are just plastic coatings that are placed on the biting surfaces of back permanent teeth, and they're very effective at preventing decay as well.
What age should a child maybe get a sealant if a parent's, you know, thinking about that?
Well, it's the most common teeth. The teeth that are at greatest risk for cavities are the permanent first molars, or some people call them six-year molars, because they're the ones that usually come in around the age of six. So that would be the first one. And then, again, when the children's 12-year molars come in. So they're the first and second permanent molars. Those are the ones that are at greatest risk and that we really try to target with sealants and that most insurance companies cover. Then, for other children, maybe in some cases it might even be indicated to seal a baby tooth, or for adults. Adults could benefit from sealants as well. It's less likely that insurance companies are going to cover those, but it's, again, something that you should discuss with your dentist.
Are the sealants very expensive, or is this something that's...
No, it's probably about half the cost of a filling, and there's no anesthesia involved, there's no shots. The tooth just has to be kept dry, and it's cleaned, and then there's a mild etchant done to prepare the enamel. And then there, a little plastic coating is applied, and usually a bright light is used to make the coating set up hard. And the rationale is that fluoride is very effective at preventing cavities, but it works best on the smooth parts of the tooth. And the deep pits and the fissures on our back biting teeth, food can get packed down in there, and fluoride isn't very effective in those deep pits and fissures. So fluoride in combination with sealants make an excellent preventive protocol to, you know, keep kids from having decay.
Great. Well, we need to take a quick break. After the break, though, we will hear more great answers to our pediatric dentistry questions from Dr. McTeague. You are listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavicko, Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome back. You're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS, Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavicko. I am Beth Delpani, guest hosting for Dr. Kavicko today. And with us, we have Dr. Dennis McTeague, a professor of pediatric dentistry at The Ohio State University College of Dentistry. Thanks again, Dr. McTeague, for being here with us this morning.
You're welcome.
Kind of want to pick up where we left off. The topic today is children's dentistry, and we were talking about fluoride, sealants, and some of the things, the preventative care. I had a question about fluoride. What if a child were to swallow that? Is that a dangerous situation, or is it relatively harmless? What are your thoughts
on
that?
Well, the amount of fluoride that a child could swallow at home, it doesn't cause any acute problem, Beth. I think that the... you know, an overdose of any of many, many drugs could cause a problem, and but the child at home couldn't get to that. I think that the chronic, if a child was to routinely swallow toothpaste, then the potential is that they could have a mild mottling of their enamel. You've seen children or heard about snow-capped teeth with little white specks sort of right on the biting edge of their front teeth. Mm-hmm. And that is probably the most toxic problem that a child could have, and it's something that we want to prevent. And the way to do that is to not let your child, you know, swallow the toothpaste. It's interesting that if you see some of the toothpaste commercials or see the ads in the magazines, they'll show a loading up a toothbrush with a whole, you know, long roll of toothpaste and then sort of putting a little dollop on the end of it.
Uh-huh.
All a child needs is just a very small amount of toothpaste. It's the brush that cleans the teeth. The paste is important to provide the fluoride, and the child doesn't need much. So we think that... you know, having you supervise your child when they're brushing their teeth, you can help them first, help them brush their teeth with a dry brush, and then and when you're finished with that, just put a small, like a pea-sized or a smear of toothpaste on the brush. That's all they need to get the right amount of fluoride. Then you don't have to worry if they swallow it.
I'm kind of laughing to myself just because my 3-year-old son likes a lot of toothpaste. I'm going to have to tell him what I learned today.
Well, he does, and, you know, the companies make it so tasty and all that, mm-hmm. and so it's only natural. So it's got to be something that's supervised. It's a great question.
Well, and what about this toothpaste that they sell, and it says there's no fluoride in it? It's kind of a starter toothpaste. You tell me your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, if a child is getting lots of fluoride, particularly in the first 2 years when you're beginning to teach a child how to brush, and they live in a fluoridated community like Columbus, and they're drinking fluoridated water, and you're cooking with water that's fluoridated, then they probably don't need to have the fluoride in the toothpaste. And so that's not a bad plan to use starter toothpaste, and there's none in there, then you don't have to worry at all about their swallowing it. But it's not benefiting them in any way.
Okay.
You know, then I would say don't use it, because the paste that you can buy in a store isn't abrasive enough to clean a child's tooth. It's nothing like the paste that your dentist uses that's very abrasive, that gets those stains out. And, you know, little children don't have stains like that anyway. So,
fortunately.
Right. So the real reason that we use toothpaste is to provide fluoride. And you could, if you had concerns about that, you could start them at the age of 2. And then, again, just use a little bit.
And speaking of products that are out there, what are your thoughts on ACT Fluoride Rinse? Does that actually help our kids?
Fluoride rinses are great. It's again, it's not for little kids. Fluoride rinses are for older kids. Kids that, earlier we spoke about kids that are at greater risk for decay. And again, the children that are at greatest risk for decay are kids who've already had decay. So if you have a child who seems to really be decay prone, then be looking at other ways to use fluoride. Teenagers particularly will like the idea of a fluoride rinse, because they can kind of swish it and spit it, and they come in different flavors and can help freshen their breath. Kids that are in braces, braces are great for straightening teeth, but if the kids don't keep them clean, the plaque can build up under those brackets, and then when they come off, they can have those, looks like railroad tracks, you know, irreversible marks on the teeth, because their enamel was decalcified or softened because it wasn't clean. So for kids with braces, a fluoride rinse might be a good idea. It's more expensive than toothpaste. And it's the same fluoride, so it's just another approach. If a child is more likely to be compliant rinsing with a fluoride rinse, then fine. But probably the cheapest and the most cost-effective way of preventing decay is to use toothpaste again, brush again, you know, several times a day.
Doesn't hurt a bit. We want to shift gears just for a moment, Dr. McTeague. We want to mention our question of the day again. And again, that's according to Men's Health Magazine, the city where the most people visited the dentist within the past year. What was that city? We did have a few email answers here we want to run through. John from Powell sent in his guess of Madison, Wisconsin. Sherry from Columbus, she guessed Portland, Oregon. And Connie from New Albany guessed Lincoln, Nebraska. And, of course, we'll get to that answer a little bit later on the show. So be thinking, again, according to Men's Health Magazine, what's the city where the most people visited the dentist within the past year? We'd like to say it's Columbus, but we'll certainly find that out here shortly. And, Dr. McTeague, one more question before we head off to a break. I wanted to ask you this earlier.
Sure.
Do the young children that have cavities with their baby teeth, do they need to actually have those cavities filled?
Yes, many times, Beth. Every day at Children's Hospital, we're putting little children to sleep under general anesthesia to take care of kids who have really severe and early decay, and they're just too young to be able to treat in the dental office. And if you had a small cavity in a tooth that's just about ready to come out, that's not a problem. But baby teeth are there for a lot of reasons, and it's important to keep them healthy. Children can have terrific pain and infection and swelling if cavities get too far advanced. And also, decay in between the teeth can wear down the teeth in between, and then the teeth move together, and they don't serve as placeholders for permanent teeth. And so what can actually happen is that there isn't space for permanent teeth, and the child, when their permanent teeth come in, they're crowded. So there are many important reasons to keep baby teeth healthy. They're not just like, well, they're baby teeth, so why bother with them? It's going to be a problem if we don't take care of them.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. We need to take a quick break. After the break, though, we'll be discussing more, of course, about children's dentistry with Dr. Dennis McTeague. You are listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
You make me smile. We never think enough.
Welcome back. You're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS and Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. I am Beth Delponte, guest hosting for Dr. Kvitko. He is out today. And with us, we have Dr. Dennis McTeague, a pediatric dentist that's discussing all kinds of very interesting things about children's dentistry. Before we get into some more of those topics, I did want to restate our question of the day, and that's according to Men's Health Magazine, the city where which city where the most people visited the dentist within the past year, what city was that? And we had a few email guesses that I mentioned earlier, and none of those guesses were correct. So we'll be talking about that some more and see if we come up with any more emails or phone calls. Of course, you can always email us, Dentally Speaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. And you can always give us a call, 821-1230. So we'd love to hear from you. Again, we're talking about children's dentistry today, and Dr. McTeague, I wanted to get into a little bit of pediatric trauma, not something that I feel like I'm talking to other moms about too often, but it's certainly something that can probably happen fairly often.
It is, you know, and the thing about having teeth damage is that particularly permanent teeth, these are the front teeth that a person's going to have for the rest of their life. And there are a few important things that I think that parents should know. First of all, baby front teeth, the greatest incidence of injuries to the baby teeth are when a toddler is just beginning to walk. So, you know, from, 12, 14 months through 20 months of age, something along that, like that. You know how teetery a little one can be. And the things that seem to really damage those are coffee tables. You can just imagine the little baby coming, going up to the top of the coffee table and slipping and hitting their teeth on them. Many times we can save those teeth. Sometimes injuries are so severe that we can't. But the most important thing is that the permanent teeth are already in the gums right above the baby tooth. And, they're just beginning to calcify, just beginning to develop right when the baby is born. If you can imagine that, they're already there. So it's important that a dentist see the baby after they've injured these teeth, because we want to make sure that there's no damage to those developing permanent teeth.
Very nice. We just replaced our coffee table. That was so funny that you mentioned that, into something a little more cushy.
Yeah.
So certainly something to keep in mind if you do have the little ones.
My adult kids have gone to having like ottomans and things that are sort of like cushioned and soft like that, because when Grandpa comes, get rid of that coffee table.
Well, sure. And, you know, you don't always think about it until maybe they get hurt.
Exactly.
What's the worst trauma case maybe you've ever seen at this point?
Well, I think that you know, obviously we see kids at Children's that have had all sorts of serious accidents and lots of injuries. I think that the worst injury that can commonly occur and happens all the time is having a permanent front tooth knocked out. And, you know, our kids are so active. They're riding bikes, they're riding skateboards, and they're playing sports. In many of these sports, maybe unorganized or disorganized sports, they don't wear a mouth protector. And so they fall and hit their face and knock out a permanent tooth. In fact, you might be surprised if you think of the sports, think of the organized sports now that kids participate in, and you try to think which one would cause the most dental injuries. People are surprised to learn that it's baseball, which, you know, we're just getting into baseball season right now. Because there's a lot of projectiles. There are bats being swung and balls being thrown and hit. And kids, you know, usually don't wear mouth protectors or mouth guards when they're playing sports, playing baseball. And so they get a permanent tooth knocked out. And there are a few really critical things that people should know when a permanent tooth gets knocked out.
So obviously you're recommending the teeth guards in as many sports as possible.
I would say, you know, if you have any concerns, yeah. In football, it's mandatory, and I think in lacrosse and the high school kids, it's mandatory. But in some of these other sports, absolutely. Your dentist can make a mouth guard, or, you know, you can buy them at the sporting goods store, the ones you put in hot water, and then the child kind of, we call them boil and bite.
Mm-hmm.
Any mouth guard is better than no mouth guards, Beth. And it could be that the best ones are the ones that the child is most likely to wear, and they may be the custom-made ones that your dentist makes. But those are more expensive. So, you know, let the parent be the judge, but the important thing is to be aware.
I want to keep everyone in mind that if you do have a question for Dr. McTeague, again, feel free to call in 821-1230. A very interesting topic today, children's dentistry. And for our question of the day, we have had a few email answers come in. I want to run through those. Again, the question, according to Men's Health Magazine, what was the city where the most people visited the dentist within the past year? Mary from Grove City guessed Cincinnati. Helen from Westerville guessed Miami, Florida. And Karen from Dublin guessed Orlando, Florida. And we'll be getting to that answer and see if any of those were correct. Don't forget, again, this is all available by podcast. If you missed the show for any reason, this is at www.talk1230wyts.com. It's very simple to get to. Just choose Dr. Kvitko from the on-air menu drop-down box, go to podcast page, and click on listen. Very simple to get to. You don't want to miss out on any of this important information, especially if you have children. One other thing, Dr. McTeague, that I wanted to get into today with you was children receiving general anesthesia. I know I've talked with friends, and they're very nervous about their child and how they will be at the dentist. Can you touch on this topic for me?
I sure can, Beth. Would you mind if I just said one more thing about traumatized teeth that I didn't say?
Sure.
If your child has a permanent tooth that gets knocked out, the most important thing that you can do is to rinse it off and put it right back in the socket.
Oh, you're kidding.
That is the absolute best possible thing that could happen.
How does that work?
It seems kind of scary, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the teeth get knocked out pretty easily because they just have a long, skinny, thin root. And the idea is just to open the mouth and just put it. I've seen children have put their own teeth back in, but maybe the coach could, the school nurse, principal, big brother, sister, whomever. That is the best treatment. I think the message needs to be that if we can get these teeth back in the mouth within 5 or 10 minutes, the chance of their recovery is really good. If we don't get them back in the mouth within 5 minutes, then the chance of recovery goes down. And the lifetime cost of a missing front tooth is really up there. You know, it could be $30,000 or $40,000 and over a lifetime. So in today's dollars, the next best thing, because I appreciate you as a mother saying, oh, my God, how am I going to do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just can't even imagine. I've never even heard of that.
Sure. The next best thing would be to put it in a glass of milk and see your dentist immediately.
Okay.
Your dentist should be able to tell you how to reach him or her anytime. If they're going to take care of children, they should be available. They should be available. And that's a good question to ask your dentist. Are you available if my child should have an emergency after hours on the weekend? And maybe the dentist himself is not, but they should have somebody covering for them. So that's a good question, but please have your listeners remember that the very best thing, if a tooth gets knocked out, put it right back in the socket. If not, that put it in a glass of cold milk and come in immediately, and not milk or water. Water's the worst thing. Water will kill the tooth. So you'll see this in some of these posters every now and then where it says, you know, first aid for dentistry, and they'll say put the tooth in milk or water. Water's horrible. Milk is fine, but putting it right back in is the best.
Great advice, Dr. McTeague. We'll be back. You're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS.
So hear me when I'm saying, smiling faces.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. I'm Beth Dalpani, filling in for Dr. Kvitko today. And we have a special guest, Dr. Dennis Mateague, a professor of pediatric dentistry at the Ohio State University College of Dentistry. We were talking earlier, Dr. Mateague, we just touched on this, and I wanted to get back to it, about general anesthesia in children. Tell me what we can learn from that. A lot of parents, you know, concerned about bringing their child to the dentist that maybe they can't handle it for whatever reason.
Sure. Well, I think that in most cases, gosh, you know, well over 90, 95% of the time, your child can be well taken care of just in the dental office. And particularly, again, this is why we want to start the child early. We want to be able to meet with the parents before the child has decay problems. In special circumstances, if a child has a bad accident and they're very young and we need to do lots of invasive treatment, it can just be too much for a child. So we can sedate children. Now, to do sedation in the dental office, it needs more, a higher level of training, more advanced training, and you have to have a sedation permit in this state to do it safely. So that would probably be something that a specialist would do, a pediatric dentist would do sedations. But we sedate children for very short procedures. If it's going to be a lengthy procedure, if we have to take care of a number of teeth, then the safest, most effective thing to do is just to put the child to sleep and do their treatment under general anesthesia. It's the same way that they would be put to sleep if they were going to have ear tubes or, you know, tonsillectomy or anything else. And we do this at Children's Hospital every day. The sad thing is that when we take care of kids that just have a mouthful of cavities, these are things that can be prevented, and it's amazing that sometimes we'll have children that have, you know, 18 or 20 teeth that have cavities, and they're not even 4 years of age yet, Beth. So you can imagine that would just be impossible to do, in a clinic situation, and it's far best for the child to be asleep to get this treatment taken care of.
Is it something, for a parent, I don't know, I feel like I'd be a little more concerned about having my child go under general anesthesia. I mean, talk about the safety of it. I mean, is it something, obviously,
well, you know,
doing
the general anesthesia, there's always a risk when you put a child to sleep, but it's certainly much, much, much safer than it ever used to be. And we have anesthesiologists that do the anesthesia so that there's somebody who's taking care of the child while they're asleep, and the dentist is doing the dental treatment. It's you know, we certainly would like to avoid it if we possibly can, but there's really, it's the same thing. While you could have your child awake and use local anesthesia to do PE tubes or tonsillectomies, we really don't do that. It's the safest thing to have them go to sleep. But we'd rather prevent doing that treatment. I think one of the dilemmas that we face in this state is that some insurance companies will pay for the general anesthesia for a dental procedure, and others won't. Many states in the country have passed laws that prevent insurance companies from denying general anesthesia. And I'm talking about their medical insurance, not their dental insurance here. The medical insurance should be paying for the general anesthesia for these preschool children that need dental procedures, need to be asleep for them. The reason that I say it's the medical insurance is that the reason is the child's going to sleep is not because the abscess is in their mouth. It's because they're little and they're not able to tolerate having this procedure done in a clinic situation. It's exactly the same. If the abscess is in their ear, the medical insurance will pay for it. But if the abscess is just a few millimeters in a different spot of their head, then sometimes insurance companies will say, oh, well, that's dental, so we're not going to pay for the general anesthesia for your child to go to sleep.
Interesting.
And it's not fair.
Well, sure.
And in some cases, we've seen that, to make it even less fair, we've seen, depending on who the parent talks to or which parent, in the same insurance company, sometimes it'll be approved and sometimes it'll be denied. So that's a problem that we have in the state, to make sure that care is equally accessible to everyone.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to mention a little bit and have Dr. Mateague touch on flossing with your children. You're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS.
Tell me.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko. The topic today, children's dentistry. Don't forget, if you have a question, we have our guest, Dr. McTeague, here with us today. Call 821-1230. Lots of interesting things we've been talking about. Before we get back to Dr. McTeague, I wanted to run through our question of the day one more time. According to Men's Health Magazine, the city where the most people visited the dentist within the past year, what was that city? A couple more email guesses coming in. Mary Ann from Worthington guessed Salt Lake City, Utah. And Beth from Bexley, she guessed Phoenix, Arizona. Unfortunately, all these guesses we've had here, not correct. I am going to finally tell you the answer today, and that is St. Paul, Minnesota. Thank you for all of your guesses. St. Paul, Minnesota. Again, the question, according to Men's Health Magazine, the city where the most people visited the dentist within the past year was St. Paul, Minnesota. Dr. McTeague, does that surprise you at all?
No, not really. St. Paul's known for having really high health standards, so I was trying to think myself. I didn't know. That makes sense to me.
All right. Well, we wanted to touch on flossing, or I wanted to ask you a bit about that. I know it's funny because my three-year-old has actually expressed a little interest in it. He's seen, you know, his parents do it, and depending on something he's eaten. But what is really, how can you easily do that? Do they do it on their own? Do you help them? What is the proper way of introducing flossing to your children?
Well, you may be surprised to hear this, Beth, but we don't recommend that children under the age of 8 even floss.
And why is that? That's interesting.
Well, because, you know, to do flossing correctly, you have to wrap the floss around your tooth. You make it sort of like a C, and you scrape the side of your tooth with it. And it's a very thin piece of string that can be very sharp. And it's difficult to do it on a little child, and it can actually cause damage to the gum tissue between the teeth. So our recommendation is to keep it simple and keep it effective, and that is to help your child brush their tooth with a dry toothbrush to get them really, really clean, and then put a little bit of toothpaste on it and scrub that on. Let them go to bed with the toothpaste in their mouth. One of the things we frequently do when we brush, one of the first things we do is rinse out all the toothpaste, right?
Sure.
And so then you rinse out all the fluoride. So with a child, a good habit is to have them brush their teeth, put a little bit of toothpaste down there, brush that, spit out but not rinse out, and go to bed. Flossing, again, that's more important for kids who are having decay in between their teeth, and we recommend that for a child to floss themselves, that they really usually don't have the skills to do it effectively until they're at least 8. Before then, I would say sit with your dentist. If your dentist recommends that the child's teeth be flossed, have the dentist show you some good techniques. There are little floss holders, so you don't have to try to, you know, wrap the floss around your fingers. There are little floss holders that you can use to floss your children's teeth if your dentist thinks that should happen.
Well, speaking of kind of a bedtime routine, I've heard it's not necessarily a good idea to put a child to bed with a bottle of milk.
Oh, my
or
gracious.
Juice.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's one of the things that we see causes this early childhood decay. If a child goes to bed at night with a bottle, even of milk has lots of natural sugars in it. They go to bed at night, they suck at night at will on this bottle of milk, and at night our saliva flows down, and our saliva is sort of our natural rinsing mechanism to rinse away foods that can cause decay. So our saliva goes down, the child can have this bottle of milk all night long, and we see this really destructive pattern of decay. And in the child that young, it's just a very difficult thing to take care of. So that's one of the things that we want to talk about with parents when we see them early at that first visit at 1 year of age.
What about breast milk? Has that changed the story a bit, or is it the same thing?
Well, you know, breastfeeding is the best feeding, and we all encourage people to breastfeed. But we have seen children who can breast at will at night all night long that can prevent that can present the same sort of dental decay. But just some counseling can help prevent that, so that parents can continue to breastfeed, safely and not put their child at risk for decay.
Sure. Quick reminder for maybe listeners that have just joined us, can you again restate the best time to start taking your child to the dentist? Because that's the biggest question I know.
Yeah, it is a surprise.
Have.
We would like to see you take your child to a dentist at about the age of 1. That's before children have dental problems. And at that point in time, the dentist can talk with you, introduce dentistry to the child, let you know how to get into that dental office so the child has a dental home, give you all sorts of information on how to prevent decay in the future.
Dr. McTeague, thank you so much for your time today. A lot of great information for parents out there listening. We really appreciate your time, and it was great getting to know you and talking to you.
You're welcome. I'm happy to help.
Thank you so much. I'm Beth Dalpani again. I was guest host for Dr. Kavitko today. You'll want to be sure to tune in next Sunday, of course, at 9 a.m. when Dr. Kavitko will be back here in the studio. He'll be anxious to get back and hear from you on the phone or email or whatever it is. Again, you're listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WITS.